You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Boys, put down your utensils. I want to talk to you about something real quick. If there's anything that you want to talk about, any kind of secrets, now's the time to put it on the table, okay? And if you tell me, we're not going to be mad.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I went to the petting zoo and I let the goat lick my
butt.
No, honey. Promise you wouldn't get mad, okay? They're being honest.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
One time I put a firefly in my butt.
Why?
To make my farts glow.
Oh, God.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I touched myself to Drew Carey on the bus, right?
God. Okay, that's enough. Stop, please.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan. You imagine being fined $100,000 and writing that check and not really feeling it financially. You're just like, damn it. Okay.
Whatever.
It's like a $45 fine.
Yeah, Pete Carroll's going to make like $9 million this year, I think.
Peyton probably makes 10.
They got to be. Let me look up highest paid NFL coaches. I'll be curious.
It's got to be Belichick, right?
We just did this recently.
Oh, okay.
I know Gruden's up there, remember, because he signed that 10-year, $100 million
Gruden's
deal.
Gruden's number one.
Oh, okay.
Belichick, according to CBS Sports, is number one at $12 million. Pete Carroll, number two at $11 million. Gruden, number three at $10 million. Sean Payton, number four at $9.8 million.
Mm.
And who else? Who are we missing?
Meh. I think that's about, in terms of longevity.
I'm talking Shanahan was the other one, right?
Yeah. Fangio is probably going to feel it the most.
Fangio, he's
got bigger problems.
He does.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, he probably has the shortest leash of any coach, the smallest paycheck of all the coaches fined.
It for sure does, yeah.
So,
I'm not saying this list, for whatever reason, just lists the top 10, and neither of them are in the top 10 highest paid coaches.
I would be all for Peyton and Carroll and the guys that it won't affect them to publicly come out and call out the NFL on its hypocrisy. And the only reason they're doing this is because the coaches don't have a voice to collectively bargain with the league and raise a holy stink about it, because it's foolish. And anybody thinks that this actually makes a difference and is worthy of the fine.
Right.
It's hideous. And so it offends me in that fashion. You're absolutely right. They sent you the rules and whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe they have.
It's all for PR. It's a meaningless thing.
But I think if the coaches have previously tried to do things through proper channels and say, this doesn't matter, we're already in here. And it does present. And I could see if they're the ones that are talking into those microphones in the helmets, you start adding. I mean, those can't be. Not like you're getting Bose, surround sound in your helmet there.
Shanahan and Gruden for sure are in the helmet.
Yeah.
They're the play callers.
Well, I believe Sean Payton probably is
Sean
too.
Payton is
Payton.
Too.
Yeah.
So
Carroll doesn't have much of an excuse.
Carroll.
He's just munching on his gum, you know.
He's also a 9/11 truther.
If I were Carroll and Payton, those top coaches that are making, I'd talk to my owners first. I say, I feel like making a stink about this and letting people behind the curtain to say, hey,
this is what we did. This is how we handled it.
We tried to go behind the scenes and tell the NFL, this is foolish. This is stupid. It doesn't make any sense. This is purely cosmetic and superficial, and knock it off. Don't.
And
if you're going to have us, if you're going to have us coach the games and be out there with players and all of those sorts of things and all the protocols, get people to trust the protocol. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the going against the pro. I think it's optics. And as dumb as I think the NFL, I think the NBA is even dumber. The NBA is in a bubble.
They're not leaving.
And if you have COVID, which nobody's had it yet.
No, not since they got there. There was like one or two players, I think, initially that they got there. And that was like 3 months ago.
But they had it before coming in. They got tested. So if you have it, you're not at that game. You're not in the arena. You're not even by your team.
Yeah.
What are you still wearing them? It's like you and me. You just got tested recently. My wife just got tested recently. We're both clear. Every day we come in here, I don't know what you do when you go home, and you don't know what I do, who I'm around and who you're around.
Yeah.
But there's an element of trust there. And until something happens, you know what I mean? Like, we can't do a show with masks on. The NBA is kind of the same way. It's like, you're actually not stopping anything
right.
because there's nothing to stop. All of these people connected to it don't have COVID. Right. So why are the coaches still wearing masks? I don't get that.
I think it's, if I try and play their side of the coin, I think they would argue it's a symbolic thing. They want to send the message of you should be wearing a mask. I don't agree with it. I agree with mask wearing, but in their case, it's like, doesn't make a lot of sense because they're getting tested and there's protocols that are followed. The other follow-up that I would have for the NFL, and this is one that if I'm a coach, I would follow this rabbit hole. Where's that money going to go?
Yeah. Well,
is that paying, like, where is that going? Is that just going into the general fund? Are we paying bonuses?
Was it
Are we going to donate that to, like, COVID causes? Because at least you want, like, something positive to come out. What was it, $350 for each team?
$350 total.
Well, it was $100 for the coach and $250 for the team.
Dude, you're getting up close to $1 million, man.
They went over a million.
Over $1 million.
With those three.
And you're probably going to get Sean Payton. You're going to be at, like, 1.3. Who knows, John Gruden? You're going to be at 1.5 million. Like, what are you going to do with that money? That's a lot of money to be handing over to the league. That's the other rabbit hole that I would follow if I was one of the coaches.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what the response from coaches week three is and if this is a topic again. And this is the weird part of 2020 is this is a topic.
What if they just keep doing it? What if Sean Payton's like, dude, I've made so much money in my career. You're going to find me, what's that, another, end up losing like $1.5 million or something. You keep going at $100,000 a week.
If you don't care, you don't care. I do wonder if the league would then dive into suspension talk at some point if you do it multiple times. And to my original point, like, if they want to say F you to the NFL, then say F you to the NFL. I'm kind of on their side and they're thinking in this.
Right,
but
right.
Can we stop with the excuses for coaches who make $10 million a year? Grocery store workers have to wear them all day.
Yeah.
No, it's just, it's a bit ridiculous. All right, let's get to this. College football. You want to talk about some more hypotheticals?
Let's do it, man. We're back to more hypotheticals, huh?
Well, this one's encouraging. The Mountain West Conference originally postponed their season.
Depends on what conference you're a fan of to use the word encouraging.
Bill Gaffney's listening. San Diego State fan.
There you go. Let's go Aztecs.
He's a San Diego State guy, right? No, his kid's San Diego State.
His kid's San Diego State.
He is St. Mary's.
St. Mary's. Wow, that's the level of disrespect there. You're never going to recover from that.
Connor Gaffney's the future king. I'm sorry.
We just got totally booted off of that force. Thanks a lot, man.
Well, the Mountain West originally postponed. They have told multiple reporters, and Pete Thamel was the first on this, that they're aiming to play an 8-game conference-only schedule starting October 24th with a league championship on December 19th, a structure that mimics what the Big Ten approved late last week.
So they're looking either that or starting on Halloween.
They still haven't given full approval for it, but Thamel is saying that they are optimistic. The officials within the Mountain West are optimistic that they'll be able to get this going. Local health restrictions have impacted three schools in California, Fresno State, San Diego State, and San Jose State, although San Diego State is likely in the best shape to proceed, according to sources. Fresno State, on the other hand, has faced difficult practicing because of local COVID-19 restrictions. I've been through Fresno. That's not surprising at all.
It's the same thing the Pac-12's dealing with.
And one Mountain West source says, quote, I don't think everybody has an illusion everybody is going to play the same amount of games, end quote. So that's probably the thinking within all these conferences. Again, multiple games have been postponed with the start of college football, but the Mountain West, the next conference jump in. And before we dive into the conference, let me throw this. This is pissing people off that are Pac-12 fans because they're saying, wow, now the Mountain West is coming back before the Pac-12.
We're getting laughed up again. Why are we waiting until Thursday to meet? I understand the frustration.
I still haven't heard any reporting on why they waited until Thursday.
Yeah, why you could meet on Friday and it felt like the ball was rolling and we were going to get a decision by Friday night. That's kind of what we thought as we were leaving the show. And then you saw the report that said they're meeting again next Thursday. Like, wait, excuse me? Isn't there a sense of urgency here? Aren't the coaches complaining about not having enough time to ramp up? So why are we wasting another week?
The only thing I could think of is they had to lobby the Bay Area politicians.
Yeah, that's still ongoing.
Politicians aren't necessarily going to do things on the athletic conference's timeline.
Yeah, I would argue you should be able to do both at the same time. Like, let's put a plan in place. And then there hasn't been much restriction in Oregon or California in terms of the LA area and the state.
The LA area got right out of the
hell away. LA was like, yeah, what the hell? And I imagine that the Bay Area would ultimately be the same. Like, let's put a plan in place and try and start practicing next week.
That's the only logical explanation of why they're not doing this until Thursday was they couldn't get in front of the people they needed to in the Bay Area.
I think David Shaw tweeted yesterday that he was having, they were having dialogue back and forth. They were making progress. So they feel like they're eventually going to be lifted. The other part about the Mountain West, I think that's frustrating, is the fact that they're coming out with that timeline and they're faced with the same problems that some of the Pac-12 teams are faced with. Like the Big Ten, I think to compare it to the Pac-12 is complete apples to oranges because they never shut down. They didn't have to shut down. They continued around their programs. They stuck. They were still practicing. Guys were still working out. Like there was no halt to what they were doing. The Pac-12 has faced a halt. Not everybody, but a good chunk of the teams in the conference have. The fact that you had the Mountain West, as you mentioned, about three or four schools that had to deal with that to varying levels, can still get back and play by October 24th, reportedly, if not Halloween. I think that was the bigger issue for me.
Well, what does this mean for the Pac-12, and what could we be seeing come Thursday after their conference call? We'll give you an update with the latest on that next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. We got NFL True or False up at the bottom of the hour. We talked about the Mountain West potentially returning for the Pac-12. Pat 40 of SportsIllustrated.com. Did you know that's where Pat 40 worked now?
I did know that, yeah. Mm. They're still employing people, a few, and he's one of them.
Yeah, he is reporting that his sources...
Sources.
...are saying that the Pac-12 is going to be looking to come back either Halloween or November 7th, so kind of the same thing we've been hearing.
Uh-huh.
He also says models are 6 or 7-game seasons plus the league championship game. 7-game schedule would likely start Halloween. A 6-gamer would go November 7th. The title game in both those scenarios remains unchanged.
Yeah.
December 19th. He also followed up. Several Pac-12 teams haven't done much or any full-team activity, so having enough ramp-up time to 11-on-11 contact practice is important, but local government officials are more willing to work with schools now. Rapid testing, obviously a key factor in making this all happen. League administrators have been notably quiet in recent days, wanting to keep lid on sensitive situation. One source said the Pac-12 is trying to avoid a Big Ten situation where member schools are leaking premature and or incorrect info. So a bit of what we talked about yesterday and another prominent national reporter adding to it, looks like 6 or 7-game season, either Halloween or November 7th. But the encouraging part of this, despite how you may feel about a 6 or 7-game schedule, either scenario puts you in play for the Pac-12 playoff or the college football playoff.
That it does.
Since the Pac-12 title game is December 19th, the college football playoff announcement of the playoff teams is Sunday, December 20th. That's so in either scenario, you are back in time.
We're back, baby!
And everybody that was so outraged and pissed off is still going to get what they ultimately want to play with the other conferences and have a shot at the playoff.
How funny would it be after all these years of complaining about not making the playoff, it takes a 6-0 COVID-shortened season to get in and end the drought?
I mean, real question.
It would be 7 because you'd get a conference championship game if that's the format.
Sure. A 6-0 season, and we're touting it like an all-time.
Let's go, baby! Come on, we're going to the playoff. Two things need to be pointed out here.
We're going to get a 5-1 team in,
let's
huh?
go, man. Come on. It's a good, tough schedule, all right? Pac-12's going to be a gauntlet this year, isn't it? Two things need to be pointed out. One, the date for the college football playoff, and this has been echoed by them many times, is not set in stone. So I wonder if there's some workability there, and maybe those are going on behind the scenes, the conversations of, can we move this a little bit? Is there some flexibility?
You don't need to, though, if this is the timeline.
No, but maybe the college football playoff is going to tell you, hey, if we could get one more week in, maybe we'd feel more comfortable about having you being involved with the playoff. Maybe we could push it back a week. I'm just saying that's not set in stone. They've said they're flexible. They would rather have all five conferences vying for a chance than not have all five conferences. And the other one is, and this was kind of ran with, and I think it was just pure speculation, and it makes sense, but it's not true in any way, shape, or form. There's no game restriction on how many you're supposed to play this year.
None.
In order to be considered for the playoff. They have not come out and said, hey, if anybody plays less than 8 games, we're not going to count you. You got to play 10 games, we're not going to count you. The Big Ten is going to try and play 8 plus 1 with the conference championship. Some are playing 10, some are 9, some are 11. It's all over the map. So if the Pac-12 wants to enter and say, hey, we're going to only play 6, what the hell, man? Again, as long as we get a season, I'm not going to complain, and it looks like we're heading in that direction.
Okay, riddle me this, Batman.
Sure.
Let's play this fun game, because this is a very real scenario. Bama goes undefeated.
Okay.
They win the SEC.
You're a believer in Mac Jones? I think that's their quarterback.
I don't care about the quarterback. I never have at Alabama. It's always been about
it. You care about Tua?
I mean, Tua's fun to watch, but largely the defense, the weapons.
Sure.
Let's go Oklahoma. goes through the Big 12, although our boss would probably say Texas has something to say about that. Sure. Let's say Oklahoma goes undefeated. They go, what, 8-0?
Yeah.
Well, I guess both these teams would be 9 if you count conference title games, right?
Something like that. Also, that's bearing or assuming that they don't have games canceled throughout the course of the year.
Sure. So Oklahoma, Bama,
okay.
Clemson.
Okay.
Now you have one playoff spot.
Yeah, look at us. We're right here.
Just for the argument's sake.
We're waiting, baby.
Ohio State goes undefeated. Oregon goes undefeated.
I mean, they would take Ohio State.
Based on what criteria? You're playing conference only. Would it just be rankings?
Based on the belief that the conference is harder in the Big Ten than it is the Pac-12, based on the fact that they would play more games in their season than we would.
Because
there's a lot of different reasons why they would take Ohio State.
Right, and I wouldn't argue Ohio State's probably the better team.
Sure.
But just for the sake of what we're talking about here, this is potentially going to be their toughest year to figure out the playoff teams.
This is, and I have argued this, and I will continue to argue it until we get it. We're going to get it someday. Don't fool yourself. At some point, we're going to get there, and we're going to think, man, this is great. Why didn't we do this sooner? If there's ever been an argument to expand the college football playoff, it's this year. First off, you give fans more games to watch. You have a chance to recoup some revenues for the conferences that are lost.
True.
And you guarantee the conference champions a spot in plus 3 at-larges if, you know, want to throw whoever else you want in for a second-place team in a conference, whatever the case may be. I think it would be great. And then you wouldn't have to worry about this. You wouldn't have to question, well, what if one team plays 7 and one team plays 9? Because I guarantee you that's going to end up happening in one of the other conferences. What do you think the reaction is going to be if Alabama goes 7-0, but they have a couple of games canceled because of COVID, and then you get insert LSU that goes 9-1, but Alabama wins the division because they have the better winning percentage and they go to the playoff? People are going to be livid about that, but that's the reality that we're living in. It's going to be the reality for baseball. It might end up being the reality for the NFL. If you got games shortened, it's going to be on winning percentage. So everybody's playing by a weird, strange set of rules, and this is a great chance to say, hey, give us the conference champs, whether you're 6-0, 8-0, 10-0, doesn't matter. Win your conference, you're in. We'll take 3 at-larges. It would make a lot of sense.
Well, and I think if you looked at what college football has been early on with the amount of postponements they've had, Notre Dame, the latest one, they're postponing their game this weekend.
Yeah, Notre Dame Wake Forest has been postponed.
If you were to look at all of that, I think it kind of, you know, I think it answers itself to the people who were like, why don't they play when everybody else started playing? First of all, the SEC is just going to start playing this week,
mm-hmm.
right? The Big 12 has had some postponements / cancellations. It hasn't been the prettiest of starts. If you ultimately get to a timeline that still involves you in the playoff, has that been the biggest crux for people?
I think so.
Okay, so
I think it was first not playing while other conferences were playing, and then when the Big Ten announced, it wasn't about will you play, it was about if you play, can you be in the playoff picture.
And the argument about the antigen testing with Quidel that they did on mm-hmm. September 3rd, I totally get that argument too of you got that first, you could have taken that week after signing that deal and said, guys, let's think of a plan here, let's get this going, let's talk to our local leaders, politicians, and get them on board with it, and they didn't. But I've never really quite understood if the argument for Pac-12 and anger at the conference is that more geared towards being involved in the playoff or being involved at an earlier start date like some of the other schools have done. You say conferences, the SEC hasn't started, the Big Ten hasn't started, the Big 12's been a dumpster, and the ACC's dealt with their fair share of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know if that's part of the argument. Was it just about the playoff?
Yeah, I think that was a big part of it. You want to be invited to the dance, or at least have a chance to get invited to the dance,
but
which
you just
won't be invited to the dance.
I was just going
to
say, you laid out the scenario, Dirt, where they're not going to get invited.
They need
things to fall in order for them.
I'm not going to pick a Pac-12 team to make it this year, but you want to have the chance. You want to have a hot chick. You just give you a glance at one point during the season and think maybe there's an opportunity there, even though if it's going to fall through at the end of the night. You want to have the ability to get there. It's just it's going to be a weird year. I'm sure people will criticize them only playing 6 games. I think the biggest beef I have with the Pac-12 is not being more proactive after the testing thing was acquired. That has been the criticism that I have most understood, because the second that you got that, which is now almost 20 days ago, I think it was September 3rd that they secured it, the first step should have been reaching out to local governments. It should have been coming up with a game plan to get your players back on campus. Here's when the testing is going to be available. Let's start, you know, get a practice plan together. Start thinking about having a season. And they were completely caught flat-footed when the Big Ten made their announcement, and they didn't want to be the odd man out. They didn't want to be the only conference playing by themselves. And that was a bad look, really, really bad look for the conference. But I'll stick by them for postponing, because I think the way to do this in the safest possible form is to have daily testing. And the Pac-12 is going to do that. I think the SEC just inked a deal or something like that for daily testing. And their season starts in 4 days, so they've already had a month and a half of training camp. So I'm not going to criticize them for that, but I will for not being more proactive. But it would be really ironic if we make fun of the Pac-12 and Larry Scott for being so flat-footed to the point where they can only get a six-game season, but then a six-game season ends up helping you make the college football playoff. I'd laugh my ass off in November or December.
Do you think those people would say anything?
I'm not quite sure what the argument would be. You would say this worked.
Would they say, hey, commend the Pac-12 for getting a season and getting a team into the playoff and doing it the right way? Or do you think those people largely just stay quiet? And
the next step for this, though, if you do have a six-game season, is let's make sure the teams that have chances make their schedule easy.
Sure.
Give them a cakewalk. What the hell, man? It's a weird year.
Get a lot of Arizonas on that schedule.
A lot of Colorados. Colorado should have to play Washington, USC, and Oregon. You know, put those teams on there.
Who's going
to
be worse, Colorado or Arizona?
I don't know much about Arizona, so I'm going to vote Colorado on that one.
What do you mean?
Like, who's their starting? I know Khalil Tate's gone. Sumlin's not great. I get
who's
that.
Who's the starting quarterback of Colorado?
Exactly. I don't know. But Colorado's...
You
I
know
feel
more
like
about it, Colorado?
I feel like I know more about Colorado's suckiness than I do Arizona's suckiness.
Well, did you see Arizona last year? They were terrible.
They were pretty bad
last year. They were god-awful. Sumlin's been a nightmare in Tucson.
Put Colorado and Arizona on every schedule next year for the big dogs in the conference. Let's make this thing easy.
All right. So the Pac-12, according to Pat Ford, he just adds on to the speculation report that we have. They have a meeting on Thursday to decide the future or the fate of the conference. And the latest report is just adding on to the other reports that it's potentially a 6 or 7 game season that would start either Halloween or November 7th. And then the Pac-12 title game would be just in time for the playoff on December 19th. So they'd be involved at least in the dance or potentially getting a team in. We'll switch gears now. We'll go back to the NFL. We got NFL true or false. We'll get to that next. Crunch time around the corner as well. And don't forget the mail sack at 2:15. Get those mail sack questions in at 503-250-1080. We need some juicy ones today. It's been a weird 2020, so we'll get to that coming up too.
All right, welcome back in 1:34. We'll get to the mail sack coming up final hour. Keep your questions rolling in, 503-250-1080. An update on the Justin Herbert situation with the Chargers. You'll hear from Anthony Lynn, the head coach. We read a quote of his yesterday. Was it as bad as it sounded? Get to that all coming up here in a little bit. And the Western Conference Finals continues tonight. Game 3 between LA and Denver. Locked and loaded. But it's a Tuesday. It's slightly after 1:30. That means it's time for the NFL true or false. Let's take a look at last week, gentlemen.
What did we do last week?
Swigart, you were not here, so you receive an incomplete grade.
Oh, that's an 0-4.
Russ voted in your stead, and he went 1-3. So I don't know if you want to take Russ' record.
I'll see if there was anything egregious.
Okay, there was. Sprague, you went 2-2. I went 3-1. Here they were. Russell Wilson will have more rushing touchdowns than Cam Newton.
Not true.
Not true. We not all said true. False. We all got that right. Clyde Edwards-Helaire will rush for 100 or more yards again against the Chargers. I said false. You and Russ said true.
Yeah.
That was false. He only had 38.
Yeah, the Charger defense did a pretty good job for most of that game.
10 carries, 38 yards, something like that. We all whiffed on this one. Josh Allen will have his second career 300-yard passing game. We all said false. He went for 400.
Well, you didn't say he'd go for over 300.
Ah, yeah, it was over. Allen will have his second career 300 passing yard game.
I mean, hold
we
on.
All thought we all thought he'd be below 300, not over.
He had
over.
A second. Yeah, that's a second. It's his first 400-yard game.
I was going to say, it's his first 400. You said 300.
And then the last one, why Russ voted this, I'm not sure. The Bengals will not score 10 or more points on Thursday Night Football. He said true. You and I said false. They scored, 30-something?
Yeah.
30, 35.
35, yeah. So, there you go. There's
that's the only one I would
probably 35-30, they won. What do we got this week?
Justin Herbert became the first rookie quarterback in NFL history to throw for and rush for a touchdown in the first half of his NFL debut since 1954. True or false, Herbert will get his second start for the Chargers this Sunday and get his first professional win of his career. There's a lot in that, I know.
Yeah, look, I haven't seen the latest update on Taylor. I'm going to say this is true. Taylor not ready to go. They leave him out for precautionary reason. I think they go with Herbert. Carolina's awful. Not good. And no Christian McCaffrey. I think they're going to win that game. He's got good weapons. I'd say this is true.
I think if he starts, they got a really good chance of winning the game. I just think Tyrod Taylor will be back by then. I think Anthony Lynn is pretty dug in with his heels and saying this is his team for now. They don't want to rush Justin Herbert. They're not going to let one game change their mind despite the fact that he played really well. And we talked a lot about this yesterday. I mean, he got thrown in late. He did play great, but Kansas City had no film on him. They didn't game plan against him. That's going to change as the weeks come and go on. I think that's what Anthony Lynn is thinking. So I think Tyrod Taylor will be back. And the Chargers will probably win that game because your points on the Panthers are valid. But I'll say this is false.
The latest update, ESPN, Tyrod Taylor says he's recovering quite well. I'm going to say false. I'm going to change my answer.
Hey, change your answer.
I don't think Herbert starts.
Well, recovering quite well, and yet it doesn't sound like he's back out there at practice yet.
Not quite yet.
And he'll need to be out on the practice field, especially since, you know, he's got a...
Stranger injuries that I've seen in a long time.
This is from a rib injection.
An injection gone wrong.
Yeah, he had a rib issue, and then there was an injection, and Anthony Lynn...
Oops.
He couldn't breathe. Do you contemplate suing a team for that? Like,
pretty much.
That's crazy.
It's a bit of an issue.
There's a whole bunch of things. I think Herbert is going to get the start because they are playing Carolina.
Okay.
And there is absolutely no need to rush Tyrod back into practice and that Charger team.
The scary thing is, what if he plays well again? What do you do then?
He's going to sit him.
How do you justify sitting him if he comes out and plays great and they get a win?
Well, Anthony Lynn strikes me as one who marches to the beat of his own drum and could care less about public fan and media pressure. But if he had to go...
couldn't care less.
Ah, yeah.
If he had to go to the hospital overnight due to his reaction... I don't see rushing him right back out there. Then if he does still have a rib injury or a rib issue and they're not taking any injections, how much pain is he going to be in? I just don't think he's going to quite be ready to play this week. And like I said, the fact that it's Carolina, I think, does factor into it.
I am going to change my answer for the second time.
Oh, God, you flip-flopper.
Well, I just read the article. According to Lynn, Tyrod has to be 100%. They're not sure if he's going to quite get to 100 by Sunday. I'm going to say true because I think they will win.
Yeah,
either way, they're
going to
win this game. Carolina's terrible.
Number two at 80.
Just went Michael Scott with his vasectomy.
Snip, snap, snip, snap.
What do you want from me?
At 82.5%, Russell Wilson's completion percentage for the first 2 weeks of the NFL season, the best in league history. True or false, Wilson will complete over 80% of his passes this Sunday against a Cowboys secondary that's allowed 65% completions through its first two games.
I think this is false. I think he'll have a great game and carve him up. 80% it's pretty remarkable to have that completion percentage through 2 weeks. Woo! But I don't think it's going to happen again.
He's only thrown 11 incompletions in two games. He has 9 touchdowns. One of those incompletions, by the way, went through the hands of his tight end and led to a pick six. He should have no interceptions. That one wasn't his fault. This is true. He's locked in. He's unstoppable right now. He knows when to tuck it and run when he needs to. Dallas's defense doesn't scare me a whole lot. Atlanta went through them like Swiss cheese early and often in that game. Scored 39 points with no turnovers. Russ should have no problem. I have issues with Seattle's defense, not with Russ. He's going to score a lot of points. He'll complete 80%. This is true.
This is true. That Cowboy defense, add on the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have much of a pass rush right now between injuries and guys that aren't yet available to play. He should be able to just tear them up.
Now, quick question. Do you think they should designate interceptions the way they do errors and or hits in baseball?
You want to be able to take that one away?
I think in situations where it's pretty clearly on the receiver dropping that pass... we don't really
give
pin
him
the interception.
It's like an earned run.
Well, yeah, you don't have to give an interception to a tight end, but you could just say...
That one's on you, man.
Yeah, it's not the quarterback. We're not putting one in the interception category.
I would like the ability to do that, but it opens up quite the Pandora's box.
It does.
Yeah. Let's see. Number three, there are 11 2-0 teams in the NFL after the first 2 weeks of the season. True or false, there will be less than 7 undefeated teams after week three. There are 2 games that match up undefeated teams, so there will be no more than 9.
You get the Rams and the Bills playing.
And then the Chiefs and the Ravens on Monday night.
Chiefs and Ravens, that's right. Your other candidates to lose, I would argue, is 2-0 teams. Some people like Dallas this weekend against Seattle.
New Orleans. I like them in the points.
New Orleans is hosting Green Bay.
Yeah.
So Green Bay.
And New Orleans is the favorite.
New Orleans is a slight favorite in that game.
And the Bears and the Falcons.
Bears and Falcons. I think some people are still wondering how for real it is, even though the Lions have not looked good, but Arizona's playing Detroit. Houston is in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, another one of the 2-0 teams this year. So Raiders at New England.
I mean, if you see 2 more outside of the 2 undefeated.
I'm going to say this is true. I'm playing the odds because you're going to have at least have 2. So that's going to get you down to 9. You just need 2 more of those teams to lose. I'm going to play the odds and say
less
that's
than
true.
7. You need 3.
Oh, you need 3 more.
I think Houston could beat Pittsburgh.
I'll still say true. Yeah, it's the NFL, man. It's parity.
I will also say true. I think that it's definitely in play.
Isn't this the most teams in I thought I saw a stat this morning. Yeah. It said it's like the most teams in a quite a long time to be this. To have that many 2-0 teams.
Did the stats say this is the first time in quite a long time?
Yeah, that was the exact stat. Yeah, quite a long time. It was the specific year they put on it.
I'm going to say that this is false. Okay. I think there will be 7. I think you can get 2 more to lose. I don't think you're going to get 3.
Okay.
Finally, for the 5th time in NFL history, a quarterback matchup will feature the reigning league MVP facing the reigning Super Bowl MVP when Patrick Mahomes' Chiefs visit Lamar Jackson's Ravens on Monday night. True or false? Mahomes will keep the Super Bowl MVP's perfect streak alive of the Super Bowl MVP team winning as they did in all 4 previous matchups, which I have if you're interested. I did research.
Yeah,
today.
What are the other? Yeah.
2018, Brady beat Matt Ryan.
Okay.
In 2013, Ryan, that's right. Eli Manning defeated Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
In 2005, Brady defeated Peyton Manning. And in 1994, Aikman defeated Steve Young's 49ers. Suck it, Sprague.
What's your team done since you won your last Super Bowl?
Squat. Mm-hmm. Just squat.
They cost a better a lot of money. Did you guys see that story?
Oh, I did.
Well, we might have to get to that next. That's pretty juicy. I'm going to say this is false, though. I think Baltimore's
going to win.
I think Baltimore's going to win. I gambled on them this last weekend, and it was such a good feeling. Like, I never was worried about that bet at all, even though I think at points it was like a 10-point game. Maybe the back door's open. I just had no faith in Houston. I think ultimately at the end of the year, Kansas City will end up being the team that goes further in the playoffs because Mahomes is better than Lamar Jackson. But Baltimore just seems locked in, dialed in. They're playing good football on both sides of the ball right now, and I think they win. They're at home.
Yeah, I think Baltimore's going to win. False.
I think it's false, too. I think that Baltimore defense can bottle things up. Tyreek Hill has yet to really cut it loose and embarrass people as he has in previous years, so maybe teams are finally starting to figure out how to rein him in.
Well, Baltimore, too, to their credit, I mean, you lose Earl Thomas 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the season. I mean, they look better defensively this year.
They do. It shows you why they felt comfortable cutting him.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be all right.
Well, and it's also a reminder, too. Sometimes guys like that, the name recognition's big, sure, but the impact on the field can be replaced or it's really not as impactful as you think it is.
Absolutely, especially with the financial impact. There you go. NFL True or False every Tuesday at 1:30. We'll come back. We'll grade it next week, and we'll have 4 new questions to answer.
They look like a pissed off team, too. Like
they
a
do.
Team that is... We don't give a crap. We're on a mission this year.
Speaking of the Cowboys and Matt Ryan, that was quite the game on Sunday. One better took, some would argue, the worst beat you've heard of in quite some time. We'll tell you what happened. Your worst beat is welcome at 503-250-1080. This one's going to make you cringe. We'll get to that crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton, Aloha Division, Vancouver. They're all up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Stop by one of the locations today. I was not at the Glorious House of Games this morning.
No days off.
No days off.
I'll be back tomorrow. I did run 2 miles this morning, though. Lots to get to in the final hour.
Did you run or jog? What was your pace?
Not fast.
Was it below 7 minutes?
What do you mean? Like faster than 7 minute pace? Hell no, it wasn't faster than a 7 minute pace.
Then you didn't run.
No, you were jogging.
You jogged.
Okay, my apologies, skinny jerks. I jogged.
The running community got on me on that a couple of years ago, and I didn't know that was a thing.
There's a difference between jogging and running.
Oh, okay. Hoity-toity SOBs.
If you run a 7:03, they still are douchey enough to tell you that you didn't run, you jogged. Yeah.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Well, welcome to the running world.
It's like we're in spandex while you ride a bike. It's not necessary. We'll get to the mail sack coming up in the final hour, 503-250-1080. That is the fan text line. Send them in, we'll answer them. Let's get to this, though. A listener alerted us to this before the show, and thank you for sending this our way, because we love stories like this. Everybody suffers from bad beats. We love gambling, especially on the NFL. How about this one? There was a gambler in the Atlanta-Dallas game this weekend, which was one of the crazier ones in NFL history. Atlanta was up 20-0. It was 29-10. Midway through the fourth quarter, Atlanta was up 39-24. That was your score. And it felt like it was inevitable that they were going to win. Dallas trying to come back, but you can't erase a 20-0 deficit. They're not going to come back and win that game. Mm-hmm. There was somebody who took out a $35,000 live bet on BetMGM on the Falcons. The money line on the Falcons at that time, they're still on the money line, at that time was minus 3,333, minus 3,333, okay? Basically netting him, he was going to bet $35,000. That was the bet. He was only going to win a grand. That tells you how lopsided the margin was. But he just thought, I got this cash to blow. Why not turn my $35,000 into a little over $36,000? That's a lock.
Because anybody that actually bets on a regular basis knows that's never worth the that is not worth it.
The juice is not worth that squeeze? Is that what you're arguing?
35 grand to win 1 grand? If you have 35,000 to just bet casually on a live bet line, you're not hurting for money. Why do you need $1,000?
Just keep building up, man.
That is a really, really stupid bet. And I would actually flip it. If he actually had the cojones and he was a true bettor, he would have live bet that the other way, especially for somebody that's willing to just throw 35 grand away.
Oh, 35 grand on Dallas money line at that time would have won you.
They may not have
taken that big a bet. Yeah.
Because
the
payout would have been too big.
But that's your only option. You don't live bet 30 grand to win $1,000. That's kind of stupid. Yeah. Even if you win it, it's kind of stupid.
Well, he didn't win it. He lost. So he lost $35,000 in an effort to win $1,000.
I stay away from game. I don't bet.
Can you imagine that guy watching the end of that game, that onside kick? What are you doing? Yelling at him for not falling on the ball.
Do you think he yelled or do you think he was just like, oh, damn, that sucks?
I think he did. I think you make this bet. I mean, look, we can all make fun of him. That game was over. If I would have texted you halfway through the fourth quarter asking who's going to win this game,
I wouldn't have been stunned if you told me I just live bet Dallas at plus 700.
Well, sure, maybe you're going to throw like $3 on them because the payout's great, but you're not actually going to pick them to win the game.
That's because we don't make money.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
We're radio hosts in Portland on a midday show. Our max
that game
bet
was 39-24. Yeah, they had just failed like a 2-point conversion. That thing, it was over.
I'm with you. Julio Jones dropped a touchdown that would have sealed that game.
He did. The teams, we mentioned this stat yesterday, they scored 39 points with no turnovers or 440-0 in NFL history. They had never lost a game before until Sunday.
If you had enough income to bet 30 G's with those kind of odds, I really don't think you're screaming at a TV. I think you're kind of just like, that was kind of stupid.
Brutal way to lose 35 grand.
I was screaming at my TV. That game cost me a 14-team parlay.
You bet against your team. That's why I always avoid games with my teams.
Cardinals. Why didn't you just stop at 13?
Well, I made money on them week one against the Rams.
Right,
Yeah, I know, but then you have that weird conflicting feeling because you're a Cowboy fan, so you're happy that they won, but they also cost you a lot of money.
I'm kind of not happy right now because it's given everybody a false sense of how good they are. No.
I think they're going to impress you this weekend.
I think they might win this weekend.
A lot of people are falling real in love with the Seattle team, and we're just overlooking no pass rush, but that's neither here nor there. If you would have just cut that to a 13-team parlay and cut out your own team and said, I'm not betting on or against my team.
Yeah, the Sunday night game would have been a little nerve-wracking.
Oh, yeah, Seattle was the last one on the part. Yeah. Yeah, that one would have kept you up towards the end of the game there.
Well, see, last week, and you, I think you asked for the heartbreak. I'm trying to wrap my brain around some heartbreak. I actually had a weird Sunday. I laid a four-team teaser parlay, and the Vikings were the team that screwed me out of that. Mm-hmm. I hit the other three pretty easily. I then lost that bet, and I said, I don't have much funds left in this. Let's go in one more time. I laid a two-team parlay, won that one, and then took some of those winnings, and I laid it right on that Seattle minus four line. God bless it at the one. And so now I'm okay. But that first bet I laid on Sunday, that hurt my soul. And I hate the Minnesota Vikings. Yeah, temporarily.
The animosity that builds up towards teams that are bad to you in gambling, it's a real thing, man. I carry grudges throughout the course of the entire season.
So do I.
Like that doesn't go away for a long time.
I'm not going to bet this weekend against the Vikings either because that line's too fishy.
Right. Watch them come out and win by 28 points on Sunday.
But I'm also not betting on them.
Yeah, stay away from that game. Somebody said, God, I hope it was some woman's wedding fun. And the fiance said, hold my beer, baby. I'm about to turn this into 36 grand and down the toilet.
That's just such a stupid bet.
Somebody said another one. People win these bets 99% of the time. So they really aren't that dumb. He's probably won like 99% of the bets.
And he's won like what? $4,000 out of betting over $120,000.
Like, I agree with the sentiment of like these bets. I mean, Atlanta was a lock. That's a lock. They're not going to lose that game, but they ended up losing. But in order to make the $35,000 back, he realized that he's got to hit on 35 of these, betting $35,000 late in the fourth with the big lead in the game.
It's not.
It takes a long time and a lot of cash.
I'm sorry to tell that listener. It's not a smart bet. That's not a bet you lay.
Thought lost $35,000 live betting Atlanta when they were up 39-24.
To only win $1,000.
Yeah, he was going to win $1,000. That's where the money line was. He was going to win $1,050 live betting them 39-24. It obviously did not go his way, and he is out $35,000. That's a rough way to spend your Sunday. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton, Aloha Division, Vancouver. They're all back up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Stop by one of the locations today. I will be at the Glorious House of Gains tomorrow morning. Lots to get to in the final hour of the show. An update on the Chargers and what they're looking at. The Lakers and Nuggets play game 3 of the Western Conference Finals tonight. Any chance Denver bounces back, makes that a competitive series? We got the mail sack coming up at 2:15. So get your questions in, 503-250-1080. It's going to be a load of final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.